Hello and welcome to this second audio in this Miracle Healing series. I'm Dr. Alexandra Gajek, inviting you to happy health. Thanks for joining me. In the first audio, I hoped you would experience that you can relax your whole body in less than 2 minutes by relaxing your eyes, your tongue, your hands, your feet, your belly, and your thighs, and taking a few relaxing breaths as you do this. You can do this simple exercise anywhere, anytime. I encourage you to do it several times a day so it feels normal to you. In the first audio, I explained that stress is what drives every disease process, interferes with healing of injuries, and promotes aging and degeneration. That means there's always one obvious thing for you to do when your state of health isn't serving you, is preventing you from living the life you dream of and deserve, and is making things difficult for those you love. That thing is to relax and let your stress dissolve. Also, in the first audio, I talked with you about the underlying cause of stress. When you dissolve it right at its roots, it can subside very quickly. It doesn't matter what the current topic is that has your attention. All that's required is that you recognize that you are stressed, check into the belief that's at work, remember that that means you are in the separation and scarcity trance, and turn on the light of awareness of true reality. The true reality is that you are an inseparable part of all that is. This is not just a spiritual concept. This is the literal reality of what we know scientifically about matter and energy. This means that you have direct access to the infinitely abundant resources of the universe. The only thing that interferes with your experience of that abundance is staying in a trance world filled with complex beliefs that boil down to belief in scarcity and separation. Now, in this audio, let's get right down to the nitty-gritty. How does this business of forgetting and remembering reality work in the real world? Today I'd like to tell you a little story. This is the true story of how I got sick and part one of how by applying the principle I've just explained, I got well. When I completed my residency back in 1999, I joined the practice of the top doctor in my profession in the field of environmental medicine. Patients who other doctors felt they could no longer help were referred from all over Seattle, where our clinic was, and from all over the country. Others found out about us and came from all over the world in hopes of healing from very challenging conditions, cancer, multiple chemical sensitivity, complicated endocrine, neurological, immune, digestive conditions. I don't recall any patients who didn't have problems showing up in multiple organ systems. Our primary focus was to remove the toxic substances from their bodies that were putting such enormous stress on their bodies that their systems collapsed. We focused primarily on mercury, lead, arsenic, and other heavy metals, DDT, PCBs, all sorts of nasty solvents, surgical anesthetics, chemotherapeutic agents, and other chemicals. Patients were in the clinic for treatment 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. It was not unusual for them to be with us for 4, 6, or even 8 weeks running. The testing and treatment was usually not covered by insurance and ran about $5,000 a week, which meant it was a major decision for someone to undertake treatment. Many of them were too sick to work, so had no income. People would be faced with using all their savings and even refinancing their houses to get the money to come. What this meant was that we all had to be convinced that their problems included high toxic loads of the nasty stuff our program would remove in order to justify the time and expense. I remember the faces and body language of people when they were told that they were loaded with mercury or dripping with PCBs. Sometimes the results of the extensive tests we ran would be a huge relief to people who had been told by other doctors who could find no explanation for their bizarre symptoms, that there was nothing wrong with them, with the implication that they must be hypochondriacs or paranoid psychotics. These people were so grateful that someone finally validated their suffering and provided a documented reason for it and an understandable path to recovery. Other times, people who didn't identify as sick, for example, someone who felt fine but had just received a cancer diagnosis and wanted the extra treatment just to cover all the bases, or people who had just been through chemotherapy and were exhausted and ready to move on with their lives, would now find out that their problems were much worse than they thought. Then there were the people who had educated themselves about how toxic the environment is and were just scared. I was one of those people. I had spent more than a year beyond my duties as a resident researching everything I could about toxicity and environmental medicine, and I wanted to do everything possible to protect myself. Now, here I was in an office and a living situation as chemical-free as we could make them. I ate well, exercised regularly, took many of the same supplements as the patients, and frequently participated in the cleansing therapies. After all, I too had mercury in my dental fillings, had childhood exposure to pesticide spraying, and had done my share of painting without wearing a protective mask. I would give talks in the community about how dangerous the world was, the air, the water, the paint on your walls, the fumes in your carpet, and in the gasoline that you put into your car, the nutritionally depleted, pesticide-ridden food, the electromagnetic dangers of living near a power line or using your cell phone, the radioactive damage from living downwind of the nuclear power plant, the nasty chemicals in laundry soap, dish soap, lotion, all the other personal care products and chemicals that we come into contact with every day. I always felt depressed after those talks, but I was doing what doctors do without realizing it. I was following the model of trying to help people by scaring them into taking action to prevent health problems. I wrote articles, participated in a popular weekly call-in radio show about health, taught a course at the medical school from which I graduated, got a standing ovation at the medical convention where I brilliantly presented all this information and what to do about it. Within 2 years of having all my attention focused on this subject, I began to show signs of problems myself. I discovered an almond-sized lump on my neck that was initially diagnosed as a cyst on my thyroid gland. I developed a tremor in my hands that started when I was around diesel fumes. It interfered with my job because I couldn't hold my hand still enough to get a needle into a patient's vein. I was becoming one of the people who needed our program. What was wrong with this picture? I was doing all the right things. How could I be getting sicker instead of better? I was also beginning to question what was going on with the patients at the clinic. We had a recovery rate that was much higher than the average for any medical treatment. But why wasn't it even higher? What made the difference between those who got dramatically better and those who didn't? My mentor had discovered the interesting correlation that frequently the people who were showing up in our office with problems verified that they had been under emotional stress at the time of exposure to the nasty chemicals we found in their bodies. This information made me curious and receptive when I met Dr. Bruce Lipton, a cellular microbiologist who is now fairly well known for his writing about the biology of belief. He taught how the physiology of cells, right down to their DNA, changed according to the energetic environment that they were in, which was determined by the emotions of the person. He broke it down very simply. Cells functioned well, repairing themselves, manufacturing the energy and particular substances they were supposed to make, when they were in an environment of love. They shut down, stopped repairing themselves, and deteriorated when they were in an environment of fear. Back in the year 2001, this was a radical concept. By then, I was in my own practice, where I had already begun to move further and further away from the fear-based medicine I'd been practicing. I started experimenting with hypnotherapy and other counseling techniques to see what I could do to influence people away from living in the separation and scarcity trance. And I was shocked to discover that a person could make as much progress in a couple of $150 hour-long visits in my office than many made after spending $20,000 to $40,000 and 4 to 8 weeks doing this intensive daily detox process. I'm not denying that the intensive therapies we did in those 4 to 8 weeks worked. I believe there is a time and a place for heroic measures. But what I'm saying is that the effect of waking up from the trance of separation and scarcity is exponentially more powerful in unleashing the body's own almost infinite ability to heal than the most intensive physical procedure on the planet. No matter what else you are doing to be well, if you are doing it while living in the separation and scarcity trance, it is guaranteed to be a lot more expensive, time-consuming, frustrating, and difficult, and a lot less effective than simply waking up. If you can imagine trying to solve a difficult problem while you are scared, heavily sedated, and completely disoriented, compared to handling it when you are fresh, happy, and full of energy, you can begin to get an idea of the difference. When you're awake from the trance, it's not that you'd never again need to eat fresh vegetables, or choose not to eat the whole cake, or have to go to the gym, or need a good night's sleep. It's that none of this would be a struggle. When you're awake, you naturally want to do the things you know are good for you. You feel inspired and happy about doing them. It's very different from that autopilot experience of eating half the cake before you're even aware that you're in the kitchen. So here I was, beginning to wake myself up, trying to figure it all out by myself because I didn't know anyone who could guide me. There were plenty of therapists and doctors around, but no one I knew had the level of rock-solid belief in what I knew in my gut must be true. My experience of therapists was that they would send me to a doctor to talk about physical problems because their training and licensure kept them from touching illness with a 10-foot pole. My experience of doctors was that they would send me to a therapist or a minister to deal with the mental, emotional, spiritual issues because their training and the insurance structure kept them from touching these issues. Where was the person who really got it about the mind and body being all one and who could truly help me with the whole picture? I figured I had to do it myself. Fortunately, the tremor went away pretty quickly. The thyroid problem, however, was my nemesis for another 5 years. I became obsessed with it. You've probably heard of the law of attraction, where your attention goes, energy flows, and results show. I knew that, yet I couldn't get my thoughts off of my problem. I was doing a really good job of the exact opposite of what I was teaching, which was to focus on health instead of disease. Why? Well, I had this growing lump on my neck for all the world to see. I was supposed to be this great doctor. I was becoming known worldwide for publishing The Science of Being Well, one of the original, century-old Law of Attraction books, and thought I needed to be the great example of someone who had used what I was teaching to experience a miraculous healing. How could I be the world expert in it when I had this glaring problem that proved it didn't work for everyone, as I was promising it would? Here I was, a well-intentioned, intelligent person who had dedicated her life to it. If I couldn't do it, how could anyone else believe it could help them? Either I had to admit that it wasn't possible for some people to do what I was teaching, or that it didn't work for everyone. I so wanted it to. But as good a coach as I was to others who were getting these great results all around me, I was blind to my own limitations and not really applying the material to myself. I couldn't figure out what I was doing wrong. I needed a coach of my own. Instead, I was desperately trying every other healing method under the sun to make this thing go away. I had already done all that detox and cleansing. Because of my profession, I had access to plenty of information about my options. I consulted lots of my colleagues. I did hydrotherapy, yoga, qigong, exercise, took remedy after homeopathic remedy, took piles of herbs, took thyroid hormones, nutritional supplements. I changed my diet. I got acupuncture. I cut out pictures of beautiful necks and made a vision board, visualizing myself as healed. I tried to figure out what lesson this thing was here to teach me. Maybe it would go away if only I could learn the lesson. I drove 3 hours, week after week, to have sessions with a popular energy healer. I had a world-renowned Qigong master do a week of sessions on me. I even traveled into the Panamanian rainforest and got a special remedy from an 85-year-old medicine man who had cured people from all kinds of things. I laid those magic leaves on my neck and drank nasty tea for weeks. The lump steadily grew. I had gotten an uncertain biopsy and ultrasound back when the problem first showed up, both of which concluded that it probably wasn't cancerous. But a friend of mine who had had cancer was pestering me to get it checked again. The truth was, I was too scared to see an oncologist. My family was starting to pressure me to get the thing removed surgically, and I was starting to think maybe this was a good idea, even though everything I believed told me it wouldn't solve the real problem, but just make the outward appearance go away. If the needle biopsy hadn't been so painful, I might have headed for surgery anyway, just because I was so desperate. Then somebody referred me to this great new acupuncturist, and I decided this would be it. I would put all my faith and feeling into believing this would surely do the trick. Of course, I had done this with many of my efforts before, but surely this time I could do a better job. 6 weeks, 12 treatments, and $1,000 later, the lump had grown to the size of an extra-large egg. I quit the acupuncture. I was now measuring the circumference of my swollen neck daily, sometimes more than once a day, with a tape measure, praying for a miracle every night. I so desperately wanted to wake up one morning and have the whole thing be gone. I wanted to be the poster child for miraculous healing, so I could tell the world. Right about that time, I encountered another coach, Esther Hicks, who gave me the final missing piece to my puzzle. It was both global and very personal. 2 weeks after that session, my egg-sized lump that had been growing for 5 years was the size of a pea. A couple of months later, it was completely gone. That was 5 years ago. It has never returned. In the next audio, I'll tell you exactly what I learned in that session and a bit of what I've learned since. You'll receive the link for it in a couple of days. This is Dr. Alexandra Gajek, wishing you happy health.